So there's definitely a lot of government intervention when it comes to controlling the narrative, because if you control the narrative, you control reality.
Artificial intelligence is knocking at your door.
It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter your religion. It doesn't matter your belief system. You can leverage the internet to make a lot of money. If you want to lead, you have to lead from a place of confidence. And the worst thing you want to be is be a follower that follows followers.
If you do want to be successful, if you do want to earn some serious money, then you have to be prepared to piss a couple people off.
I don't think the world's ready for AI. I don't think the world understands where we're headed, the dangers that are coming.
It is scraping the internet, pooling information, and making you look like an absolute buffoon.
If carnage does unfold and there's chaos, what would Luke Belmar do?
I mean, I think the first thing that you need to do is...
What's up, guys, and welcome back to First Things Thirst. The main man, Luke Belmar, is back again for round two. How are you doing?
Brother, it's good to be here. It's good to be at your crib. Phenomenal views. Very inspiring, very motivating to see you winning, to see you elevating. Very dope.
Life is good. And I thought, you know, since the last podcast went down such a treat, over a million views. If you guys haven't seen that, I highly recommend you check that out. I thought it's only right that we do a round two. You've had an interesting start to this Dubai trip, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, basically a typhoon here in Dubai. Everything underwater was kind of crazy. I think it hit all the crypto bros. Mm-hmm. It was the curse from God. So, makes sense.
It's very strange. I've had like quite a few people asking me about what my thoughts are on this. I know like loads of people on social media are talking about cloud seeding, how it's a result of cloud seeding. But I don't think the UAE authorities or scientists have got to the point where they've mastered the art of it that well. I think they wish that they had the capability of creating that kind of a storm. I do think it's probably more natural. What are your thoughts on climate change?
Climate change in general?
Yeah.
I mean, I think climate change is a hoax as a general premise, and I think big institutions utilize it as a form of control. But I think we're getting into the place right now where science and technology is advancing to the point where people might start playing God. Mm-hmm. Getting kind of crazy out there. If you got billions of dollars for research and development, kind of fucking around and start cloud seeding, start doing some crazy stuff with vaccines and start doing some crazy stuff with experimenting on cloning and all this sorts of weird stuff. Hey, when you're a multi-billionaire, you might have some free time to start playing God.
It's so crazy because even the storms that they had here, the reason why it was so bad was because it was three big storms back to back in 24-hour period. Apparently, since the record started 75 years ago, they haven't had this much rainfall in a single day.
I mean, it was wild.
So
there's guys in canoes. Yeah. Did you see the one with the guy on the jet ski?
Yeah.
So crazy, bro. Crazy.
But the thing is, it's been like 2 days now. We were supposed to do the podcast two days ago. Obviously, couldn't make it happen. But it's still like a bit of a mess out there. Like the roads are still flooded. It just goes to show that how sort of fragile everything is.
Society is just extremely fragile. I was literally telling some of my boys, imagine this, the storm in Dubai actually lasted 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Lights went out, electricity went out. It's pretty much straight carnage. Civilization is more fragile than people imagine. It's pretty crazy.
Have you seen that film, Leave the World Behind?
The one that's produced by Barack Obama. Did you know that?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but it's kind of fucking crazy. I heard like the Teslas start self-driving, running into each other, and all sorts of madness takes place. There was another movie that was produced as well called White Noise, I think a year before, about a train in East Palestine, Ohio that gets blown up. And then a couple months later, the train in East Palestine, Ohio blows up. So who knows? Maybe the elites are
like literally
planning a takeover.
I like
just psyoping us.
There was a lot of people who had like mixed thoughts on that film and the ending, but I liked it because I was like, holy shit, this is so real. Like this could...
Have you watched Black Mirror?
Yeah.
So crazy, dude. So crazy.
Like, all that stuff is... We're very close to it.
I mean, we're already in it. You're looking at ever since COVID kind of took over and biometric scanning for facial recognition is becoming the norm. I think it was 80 or 100 years ago, passports were first introduced into kind of society for travel. Then after 2001, the 9/11 incident, you had the TSA. You know when you go to the US and you have the TSA, the security checks? Mm-hmm. It's like it's supposed to be the land of the free. and it's supposed to be the land of opportunity, but they pat you down like you're about to enter like some sort of prison.
It's the craziest shit. I've been to a lot of places in America. They have the most hostile welcome ever.
It's like crazy.
They literally, I remember when I was younger and I used to get anxious and they would interrogate me, be like, what are you doing here? Why are you coming to America?
What do you do for a living?
It's like, I just want to stay here for a week.
I'm just going to Miami, bro. Relax.
Yeah, it's, I don't know why they do that. But are you like big into conspiracy theories?
Here's the thing about conspiracies. Most of them end up being true. Mm-hmm. So whether it's 9/11, which obviously at this point, it's a big hoax and it's been proven that there's been a massive conspiracy towards invading Iraq and Afghanistan and funneling money from taxpayer dollars through the military industrial complex. That's proven to be true. At the end of the day, a lot of these conspiracy theorists get clowned on the internet, but mm-hmm. with enough time and with enough kind of validity, these things end up playing out. Whether you look at COVID, you look at some of these things where you weren't really allowed to talk about it for years and people are like scared about it. A lot of these theses end up being true. So I just observe them mm-hmm. and let them play out and let the bots believe whatever the government wants them to believe. And we just kind of play our own game.
I love it. I always get lost in the YouTube rabbit hole of looking at all these videos. I try and pick something to watch and relax my mind before I go to bed. And then before I know it, 3 hours later, I'm just like wide awake thinking, what the fuck is going on?
There's crazy ones like MKUltra, which is the mind control program from the CIA. Mm. So you see a lot of elites use MKUltra to control celebrities and things of this nature, and it's proven to be true. So if that can be true, where they run some mind control PSYOP operations on people, maybe everything else could be true as well.
Those humiliation rituals.
100%, bro. John Cena in a dress. Yeah. When he's supposed to be the most jacked stud of the world. Who does that?
Yeah.
Who does that? So, yeah, 100% there's humiliation rituals and people are willing to sell themselves for a bag. Pretty disappointing.
It is weird because I sometimes look at these people. I'm like, hang on. How did they go from like being kind of semi-famous, being in a few films or whatever, and then all of a sudden it's like they're everywhere. Like they're hosting these big shows. They're in all the biggest films.
Did you watch the Kevin Hart interview where there was he was interviewing this girl, forget the name, you can run the clip on it. And long story short, it's like, oh yeah, they pay people off or they pay people off to stay quiet. And then mm-hmm. Kevin Hart on the show, he's like, shh. They're listening. Like, okay, who's listening? Whoever that is, they have a lot of control and they have a lot of power. Mm. And at the end of the day, whether you look at the history of Disney, when you look at the history of Hollywood, a lot of these organizations are just psyops to control society. Mm. So, yeah, that's why I don't watch a ton of movies. Take things with a grain of salt. Don't watch the news. If you look at the news outlets, most of them are controlled by a couple families, a couple mm-hmm. billionaires. And most people are just spending all time watching somebody who's reading off of a teleprompter, right? And assuming that that puppet is telling you the truth when it's just merely one narrative. Mm. It's a crazy world we live in.
So where do you get your information from? If you want to know something about a particular topic, where do you go to?
I mean, I think nowadays, a lot of it is cross-referencing information. I think Telegram is one of these platforms where censorship isn't prevalent, just like it would be on Instagram or on YouTube or on Facebook. And now X is pretty good on censorship. I remember back in the day when Elon had just acquired X, and there was something called the Twitter files, mm-hmm. where they basically showcased how keywords were being blocked, certain individuals were blacklisted, and these were requests by government entities. It actually just took place in Brazil recently, where I think it was one of these federal judges was trying to ban people off of X, and Elon said, fuck you, we're not banning them, and they basically had to go offline in order to... In Brazil, in order to not have legal consequences. So there's definitely a lot of government intervention when it comes to controlling the narrative, because if you control the narrative, you control reality, because the narrative equals perception, and perception is what everybody kind of bases their worldview on. So if you can control the narrative, you control people's worldview. That's why I was talking recently with one of my buddies who used to work regular 9-to-5 in the UK, and then he started doing digital marketing online, digital nomad, and started making more money. And he's like, the people in the UK, for example, they're so enclosed into a system that they don't understand the opportunities that are out there. They think that just working for £1,500 mm-hmm. a month is like your standard. How are you supposed to live on £2,000 a month in London? People are living basically in poverty. You look at Canada right now with their 66% taxation on capital gains, and people think that that's the standard because they only have a select set of information to go off of. But the internet is the democratizer of opportunity and the democratizer of information. So these platforms like Telegram that are helping prevent censorship, or you look at the likes of Rumble, now you look at the likes of X, wherever that ends up being. These are kind of these combatants to government agencies coming in and trying to control the narrative. And I understand it as a government, if you're trying to control a billion people and you have to keep a certain narrative in check, or you have other governments come and try to push counter policy or counter narrative, it can get quite dangerous. So at the end of the day, I think the most important thing is critical thinking, thinking for yourself, and evaluating the facts at hand and understanding that most people don't have the best interest in mind for you. They have their own interest and their own agenda. So you need to ask yourself, what is the source of information? Who's the originator of the source of information? What's the origin point? And are they telling the truth? And you evaluate it through cross-referencing information. So a lot of these conspiracies end up being true, believe it or not. But yeah, just gotta level up, continue doing your own thing. And I think the most important thing is understanding that regardless of what's taking place in the world, if you can continue leveling up, having a phenomenal network and understanding how to monetize your skill sets, it's very hard to get screwed over because we live in a very interconnected world. We met through the internet. If it wasn't for the internet, you probably wouldn't be living in Dubai. I would have probably not been here. And the democratizing of opportunity happens through the ability to bypass censorship and to, in some way, shape, or form, curate your own narrative and curate your own perspective by taking as many points of view as possible. That's why you see these big people on the internet that end up being censored, is because they're a counter narrative to the common norm or the common message, and they end up getting screwed over. But
there's a way to go about it, but
there's a way to go about it. It's very difficult. And at the end of the day, like, I get it. I get the business side of it. If you're a platform and you live off of advertisers and advertisers that come and spend $50, $100, $200 million on your platform, say, hey, get rid of this account because we don't want them. You'll just get rid of that account. You don't really care because you have bills to pay. You have a business to run. So I understand that perspective. But then I also understand the counter perspective of some of these social media platforms are so big that they've kind of become town squares of information, town squares of social constructs, whereby maybe they're no longer private social media platforms. They're kind of forums for people to express their opinions. And the moment you start censoring that and controlling that narrative, it can get very dangerous very fast. I love Telegram. That's why I've been pushing it a lot recently, because they've been a really good platform to spread your own message and your own perspective.
Shout out to Pavel. He's someone I want to get on. I want to get him on the podcast one day, but I know he's a very private person.
He's a legend, though. He's a legend. I have massive respect for him, because when it's all said and done, he's fighting from a laptop, which is crazy to think about, in a very passive way.
Well, it's interesting as well, because here in the UAE, they don't make anybody a citizen. You have to be very special to be made a citizen. They made him a citizen.
I think a couple guys like CZ from Binance as well. So when you're a top dog, you get special treatment.
Have you ever been on the mainstream social media platforms? Have you ever had content being taken down?
Yeah, absolutely. But that's why content distribution is the new way to bypass censorship. When you can break the algorithm through sheer force and volume. There's only a couple people in the world that have been able to execute that effectively. It's like Andrew Tate, myself. Been able to really break algorithms. I've had videos where I talk about BlackRock, and BlackRock being a force that controls the narrative through the acquisition of companies, through tax dollars, and through their ETFs. And they're pushing a big narrative, the ESG, the entire focus on what we're talking about, making sure everything is, what's the word? Eco-friendly and sustainable. But at the end of the day, these are the guys that are riding on private jets all over the world. Their carbon footprint is bigger than anybody else's, which is kind of ironic. So you begin to look at the big players in the world, and once you start mentioning them, those videos get taken down. I remember I had videos talking about BlackRock and the companies that they control. They control the food supply. They control the communication centers. They control the social media platforms. They control the air transport. They control everything. Mm-hmm. And those got taken down. But continue uploading them since we've been able to crack the distribution mechanism. And hopefully some people are waking up. I started talking about this about 3 years ago. Now it's become mainstream and very much a common topic of conversation. But back in the day, it wasn't very popular. But slowly but surely, these videos end up getting taken down because once again, you control the narrative, you control reality. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be surprised if they have teams of hundreds of people just scouring the internet for these pieces of content, getting them removed.
Even to this day, like I've noticed, especially with TikTok, like the weirdest things get taken down.
Everything.
It doesn't make the community guidelines for each platform don't make any sense.
Well, a weird one for YouTube, for example, is that they can retroactively go back to any point in history of your YouTube channel and take down any videos from the past, even on future policy changes, and ban you for things that were from the past. Mm. Whereby when that policy wasn't in place and you said something, I think there was one that came out recently. If you said a cuss word in the first 15 seconds, you would be demonetized. So all these videos started getting demonetized after this policy was passed because somebody used a cuss word in the first 15 seconds. So creators have to basically figure out where is the line, where do you draw the line? Mm. And that's where I think a lot of people are getting sick and tired with these platforms because they're making a living off of them. They input so much effort, and without creators, these platforms wouldn't exist. So they kind of need us. And I think it's a good time for creators to kind of band together and potentially find an alternative solution to platforms that are censorship resistant. And
I've had, I mean, it's not a massive issue, but I probably had tens of thousands of dollars not given to me because of some weird demonetization decision. It's nothing to do with music.
Yeah, it's
just
weird.
Like, oh no, this is not appropriate.
And also with health, you see a lot of these expert clauses that you end up getting at the footer where they say it's misinformation, and then you click on who's the person that's curating the misinformation, and it's some weird journalist that's probably paid off. And what's really funny is there's a big psyop against seed oils, right? And tap water and estrogen in the water, where you talk about these things and then you get the misinformation post, which once again, that misinformation kind of tag, all it does is control the perception of the average person that's viewing. It's like automatically you're seeding into somebody's mind that this other person's perspective is completely false. But all of that's controlled narratives.
Well, you know, it's crazy as well because of now with AI and the technology, they have these deep fakes. So you have crazy. These people who are using the image and voice of a well-respected scientist or an expert in a particular field, and they just would type some bullshit. And then it would like
you have a wild,
and everyone's like, "Oh, but Joe Rogan said this."
Oh, well, Huberman said that you should take this supplement.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's all AI deepfake. That's going to be a big problem.
Yeah,
that's going to be a big problem validating authenticity and reality inside social media. I don't know how social media platforms are going to handle it, but it's getting crazy.
Oh, yeah, and even if like you got canceled for something, but that was actually something you said, you'd be like, "Hey, that wasn't me. That was the AI."
AI. But they're running stuff now. There's like AI softwares that check AI to see whether the AI is not valid or not. But I don't know, man. The world's getting crazy. I think ever since ChatGPT has been introduced into the ecosystem, it opened up Pandora's box. Mm. I don't think the world's ready for AI. I don't think the world understands where we're headed, the dangers that are coming.
You know, Musk is very much kind of saying this needs to be regulated.
But who regulates it?
Yeah, and there's someone who's...
The same entity that regulates the social media platforms?
Yeah.
You saw I think it was Google rolled out their own AI recently, and it was so lopsided that you would ask them to recreate an image of four white people for me. And it wouldn't recreate white people. It would be like dark-skinned people that are... you know, mixed race or something like that in order to be politically correct. That's an AI that's been trained in order to operate in a way that is not normal, that's censored or that's controlled. Imagine you start plugging in that AI to control narratives at a macro perspective. You go to China right now, stuff gets banned usually when I talk about China, but it doesn't really matter on TikTok. But you start talking a little bit about what's called Skynet. And Skynet is this massive surveillance program that is run off of AI, where they basically...
Is it called Skynet?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's a control mechanism where they have your biometrics. They create basically a digital version avatar of you with your digital ID, your biometrics, your fingerprints, your iris scan, and they manage your social media platforms, your bank accounts, and connect everything into one. And they're starting to ban people and blacklist people off of the internet, so much so that if you don't have a certain social credit score, you can't even access the internet. So in certain places of China right now, if you want to use WeChat, if you want to use Alipay, if you want to board a metro, you have to run a biometric. They run that through the AI. They evaluate whether or not you've been talking shit about the government online, and they'll drop your social credit score. And there's a lot of people that try to log into social media. They try to buy a burger at McDonald's. They have to run their biometrics, and they can't utilize these platforms. So now people are being basically blacklisted from the entire ecosystem of the world because AI is running these super complex algorithms that are censoring people at a mass scale. Because that's the problem with censorship, is if it was based off of people, right, you could censor a couple people here and there. But with AI, you can just blanket it at a massive scale and just really crack down on narratives. And things in China, when it comes to technology, roll out a lot faster than they do in the West. So all you have to do is evaluate what's taking place in China, what's called 15-minute cities, where in order for me to enter my apartment complex, I have to do a biometric scan. In order for me to leave my apartment, I have to do a biometric scan. That information gets sent to the government agency or police station, and it gets you logged in. So much so to the point where if you have a poor social credit score and you do a biometric scan in these 15-minute cities and you want to get into your apartment, it says access denied. They don't even let you into your own home. It's getting really crazy. And during COVID, the 15-minute city lockdowns, you couldn't leave your apartment because everything's basically surrounded and covered.
Yeah, they had a bad day.
It's pretty crazy.
They had a really bad day.
It's still running. That's the crazy part. COVID is still a thing in China.
Have you been recently?
No, not recently.
I
was there in late 2000, I think 2020, pre-COVID, which everything was decently fine. But today, they've taken the lockdown application and merged it into a police application, which is kind of transferred it over. It's just a mechanism of control. It's trying to figure out how far they can push the envelope in society and how far they can push the bots to comply.
Yeah, it's weird. With places like this, I see so much information about it, but I never like to judge a place before I've been there myself. Like, I want to go around and see it, experience it, and see if it is genuinely as it's being portrayed online. And I know that certain countries that are not friendly or enemies with China, they're going to portray it in a negative light. So
when I was there, I'll give you a perspective. I was in Shanghai, and you have the jaywalk kind of policy. You're not allowed to jaywalk in China. They have facial recognition cameras in every sidewalk. And what they do is if you jaywalk when the light is red, it'll scan your face and it'll deduct money automatically from your bank account. And they'll display you on a big LED board calling you a criminal. All done automatically, remotely. I filmed the video about it because it was absolutely insane. And that's what they do. It's massive surveillance, massive control. It gets so crazy that in certain places of Shanghai, and you want to walk on the sidewalk, you're only allowed to walk in one direction. If you walk in the opposite direction, they scan your face, deduct money from your bank account. And if you don't have money in your bank account, social credit score gets removed.
Is that for residents or that applies to tourists as well?
I mean, it's definitely for people that already have their entire biometric profiles. When I went to Hong Kong, though, what they're trying to do now, they have something called Flight Pass, which is this tokenized blockchain where they take your biometrics and they put them on the blockchain. And we know that the blockchain is immutable. Once it's on the blockchain, it stays there. So now what they're doing is instead of having in some sort of centralized database that could get blown up by a bomb and you lose all the information, they're putting people's biometrics and putting people's identities on the blockchain. So if you go to Hong Kong right now, they scan all your face and then they put it on a blockchain. It's called Flight Pass. And you get this flight token or token pass, something like that. And then they log you. And they're doing that with tourists now. So I wouldn't be surprised if China already has massive profiles on billions of people around the world.
Yeah, because I was just in Japan for 3 weeks, and the whole of that region just fascinates me, and I want to explore it more because I've been to so many European places. They're beautiful, but they're all very similar to each other.
Yeah.
But I feel like obviously Japan was a massive eye-opener. I know you've been before. You've had quite a lot of experience with going to these.
I love Asia.
Yeah. So would you say it's still worth visiting China or probably avoid and go elsewhere?
I mean, China's beautiful. China has incredible culture. The thing with China right now is the moment you enter, you have to walk on eggshells and everything that you do, everything that you say. I might get arrested if I go to China, you know?
Like, if they saw me go around with like the camera crew, they'd be like, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly.
Tracking everything.
So, or you already have all the videos of yourself on the internet where you're talking shit or saying something that they don't like, just straight to jail. I don't care.
Damn. What, do you have like a backup plan or a plan in place if shit does hit the fan? Like if carnage does unfold and there's chaos in the world, what would Luke Belmar do?
I mean, I think the first thing that you need to do is develop skill sets that are transcendent. So your ability to sell, your ability to negotiate, your ability to network. The second thing is you need to be multinational. So you can't just be dependent on one citizenship. And I know for a lot of people listening that may not have a lot of money, it may seem far-fetched. But if you only have one passport and that government says, okay, well, you can't leave the country, then you're kind of screwed. Mm. So it's good to have multiple passports. I've been able to build a decent portfolio of passports. And then the final thing is a network, right? You need a global network, an international network of people that understand different things that are taking place in other regions of the world. So I have certain escape plans and certain strategies and ecosystems that I'm building in different remote places of the world, just in case certain areas and certain civilizations become too controlled. Mm-hmm. Usually third world countries tend to be a good region. So people or ecosystems that are still really moving with cash, that don't have a lot of digitalization, tend to be good. So Indonesia is pretty decent. You look at Bali. Bali's still a pretty good place to operate. Argentina, now with the new presidency, is giving you access to a lot more opportunity, your ability to buy big plots of land. One of my goals is to build ranches around the world that are self-sustaining. So your own fresh water supply, your own animals, game, deer that are just roaming around, and building what I like to call high trust societies. High trust societies are small networks of people that trust each other that each have different functions inside of that community. And that community is self-sustaining in and of itself. So some people do the farming, some people do the plumbing, some people do the electricity, some people, and you kind of form these high trust societies that you can't really, really form in massive cities, whether it's Dubai, New York City, Los Angeles, because in these ecosystems, you're very much dependent off of the businesses that are making the ecosystem operate. And if these businesses go out of business, are no longer functional, then you end up being in a really tough situation.
Real quick, guys, I just want to share with you something which I spent the end of 2023 putting together for you. You see, in life, if you are unhappy with something, you need to change it. That is one of the core philosophies that has driven me, my businesses, and my fitness over the past 10 years. In recent years, I've been asked frequently how I've managed to go from being an average personal trainer, working all day, every day in a gym in the north of England, to the position that I am in today. That is why I decided to create the Digital Playbook. This is a step-by-step blueprint for anybody who finds themselves in the same position that I did years ago, wondering to myself, how can I make money online? Can I really make a full-time income from creating content about the things that I actually like? How can I travel the world, work from my laptop, and at the same time still afford to live a great lifestyle? It's essentially a playbook on how I built multi-million pound businesses off the back of creating content online. If you want to check it out, head over to thedigitalplaybook.net and you can book in a call with my team to find out more. Let's get back to the episode. I thought about this the other day. I was like, okay, so we just experienced like a storm. Everything was flooded. Pretty much couldn't drive anywhere. Like I was stuck here. Obviously, it's the worst places to be stuck. At least I can walk around. But there's still quite a lot of shops, cafes, restaurants that were closed because staff couldn't come in, operate, or even the electronics were messed up. But I was thinking, what if it's like a more severe case of this where the electricity goes out for days.
Wi-Fi goes out.
Wi-Fi goes out.
Cell towers.
The food runs out. I'm absolutely fucked.
You're fucked.
I don't even know what I would do.
And that's an issue. Like, that's an issue. And people don't think about that. People think that society, when you look at any kingdom, when you look at any civilization, they've all gone extinct. Every single one of them. The Roman Empire didn't think that they were going to get nuked. They got destroyed. They lasted about 1,000 years. Then they got divided into a couple kingdoms, but they still got destroyed. You look at Alexandria, you look at the Greek Empire.
It was even
Persian Empire.
Do you see the Eye of Africa?
I haven't seen it.
It's the Richard structure. And they believe that the city of Atlantis was there. Once upon a time, like 12,000, 13,000 years ago, maybe more, it was one of the most advanced civilizations that this planet has seen. But there was some sort of cataclysmic event. They believe it was like a flood, a huge flood that swept across Africa and completely wiped it out.
I mean, there's a lot of records that, whether it's different texts, different religions, different kind of scrolls or different history records that all point to a massive flood that wiped out society, not just once, but multiple times over. And just to assume that everything's always going to be okay is a fallacy. That's why I always say that the skeptic is the one that survives. The person that's always looking over the shoulder and is always alert is the person that ends up doing well. And you kind of have to be a little bit paranoid, because if you're not paranoid, then a bad situation could take place and you have no sort of rescue plan or B plan. That's why making money is an extremely important thing to do, because it gives you access to tools and resources and people that you wouldn't have otherwise. And the treatment that people with money, influence, and power have when shit hits the fan is completely different than the average person that is stocking shelves and that is just utilized as an expenditure.
Well, that's why I'm all for space exploration. Like, I do think that it's important for our species to be interplanetary and not be stuck just to this one planet.
I mean, now with this whole weather control thing, the time could come where you can basically cloud seed and create civilization on other places.
Have you heard that is it the HAARP program, which I think is, I don't know if that's associated with America, but apparently it's something to do with how they can alter the atmosphere to affect weather systems.
Oh,
that's all very secretive. Nobody really knows how
you can look at. You can look at Bill Gates, who's a massive crook, and he's now pushing something to add haze into the atmosphere to start kind of covering the sun, so that it doesn't cause the planet to warm up. I'm like, okay, so yeah, this guy's just playing God now.
It's gonna be no side effects of that.
Yeah.
Do you think there's anybody who is in a very strong position of influence who's actually doing a good job? Like someone you admire who's like, okay, yeah, he's doing a good job. Like he's actually trying to make a positive difference to the world.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one, because all you can go off of is perception, and perception is controlled, right? So whether you're an influencer, that's a small one or a big one, whatever content you put out ends up being how people perceive you. So what if the people that run the world understand how to control that narrative? Anybody that's in a government institution, I just automatically don't trust them, because I don't truly think that we need big government the way that it's being pushed on us. I don't believe in this source of controlled authority over mass amounts of people. And the ones that are like, oh, well, Luke's talking out of his ass, or Luke doesn't understand that you do need government. Well, you've never lived in a situation whereby you've actually had deep levels of freedom. And when I tell people, let's say you were a society that was in slavery. And let's say you're born in year 200 of that 400-year cycle of slavery. You have no concept of freedom. You have no concept whatsoever of what it means to be autonomous. Today, we look at the US dollar built on the fiat system, a massive way to control society by printing money out of thin air and getting people employed. That's why they're called human resources, right? Because you're just an expendable resource for creating, building all these things that are pretty much propped off of debt and off of fiat. It's pretty much slavery, right? And yeah, certain people can get out of it. Certain people can, you know, finesse their way to the top and like I said, the internet kind of has given people the opportunity to do that. But most people end up living lives of what I like to call quiet desperation. And they are pretty much slaves to their 9-to-5. They're slaves to the preconceived notions of how one should actually go about making money or building a business. And in my opinion, these are all mechanisms of control to subdue society and control society at mass scale. Keep people broke. In the US, for example, everything's on credit and everything's on debt. Oh, you want to get a house? Okay, perfect. Get a mortgage. Mortgage is a loan. Oh, you want to get a car? Perfect. Here's a car payment. Mm. They sell iPhones on payment plans. Everything's on a payment plan. That's all debt. It's all propped up by something that's not real. What's a 30-year mortgage? Imagine getting a 30-year mortgage at the age of 60. What are you going to pay it off when you're 90? Mm. It's not real. It's bullshit. So in the 40s and the 50s, when people were working at factories before the dollar was hijacked by the Federal Reserve and removed off of the gold standard, you would work 2, 3, 4, 5 years in a factory, make your $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a year. And in 2 years, you would buy a house. You would buy a car. You wouldn't have to work 10 years in order to afford a place to live. And that all comes down to the fact that the money printers are the way to steal from people through inflation and through the debasement of currency, which is why what we're seeing nowadays. Like I said, unless you understand monetary policy, unless you understand that finance is the new language of the elite, just like back in the day, Latin used to be the language that the church would utilize to control the peasants. Instead of teaching the peasants Latin, or in this case, the peasants nowadays, finance, you would have the Pope or you would have the minister be the one that was the middleman between you and God. And that's why when you look at the US dollar, it says, "In God we trust." Mm. It's really funny because you're not trusting in your own ability to decipher what's taking place. You're going off of a middleman. If you look at the tax code, it's 4, 5, 6,000 pages long. Who has time to read that? Who has time to actually understand what's taking place or what we're being taxed is legitimate or fair or constitutional or even legal? They don't. So people nowadays are really much trusting mm-hmm. off of big organizations, and anything that has an acronym as an organization, whether it starts with an F or whether it starts with a C, all these crazy ones that I'm not going to say just in case we end up being in a bad situation, you need to be very skeptical mm-hmm. because you don't know who's behind it. And these centralized sources of authority, whether they start off legitimate, which they truly could, can end up being in a situation that they can get hijacked and compromised. Just like these big social media platforms, they get hijacked from the inside. If you look at Pavel's interview with Tucker Carlson the other day, he talks about how a big government agency, I think it was the FBI, when he went to set up his headquarters in San Francisco, they approached one of his developers to inside of the Telegram code to put back doors so that they could get spied on. But this all happened on different social media platforms. So imagine you have all these back doors already set up ahead of time. You hijack developers, insert ghost code, and start managing mass surveillance at a level that hasn't been seen before. It was pretty much introduced in the United States in 2001 after 9/11. It's called the Patriot Act. And it's really such a funny name because they always make it sound super epic, but it's basically a massive surveillance program to control populations. It's very scary. So going back to your initial question, is there any big influencers or influential people at a political scale that I would trust? The answer is no. Because if you're playing in the swamp and you're playing the dirty game, it's going to be a hard one.
What do you think of Elon Musk?
Elon is an interesting character. I think he understands psychology and understands persuasion and understands human nature better than most. I think he's doing a lot of net positive things, but simultaneously, you have to be skeptical at somebody who's utilizing cobalt mines in the middle of Africa, right, in order to power Tesla batteries and utilizing, you know, children and teenagers and women to get this out of the ground. You also have to look at, for example, Tesla. Tesla is pretty much a surveillance vehicle at this point. It's powered by electricity, which could be turned off at any moment. In fact, in China right now, going back to China, if you have a poor social credit score, you can't charge your Tesla, right? Which is crazy. What happens when that gets introduced in the West and everybody has an electric vehicle? So they'll tell you on one
side. Do you think that's why they're pushing electric vehicles 100%, so much?
Yeah. Because it's a mechanism of control. You have one kill switch and you can basically turn off all sorts of travel. Mm-hmm. Think about it. Hey, regulation says you can't leave 5 kilometers from your house, new pandemic, new virus. Oh, well, you don't want to comply? Well, we're tracking through your car. Your car has Wi-Fi. You went 5 kilometers outside of your house. Turn off the car. Boom. Mm. And it doesn't even have to come down specifically to one individual like Elon. But this entire premise right now of biometric scans to access the internet is getting pretty dangerous. So I think there's also a net positive, but he really knows how to play people and play both sides of the aisle.
He's always a few steps ahead. He's good.
He's good. He's very good. And that's why he is where he is today.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like I said, I don't trust a lot of people in these high ranks. And that's probably why I haven't been invited to any of these crazy parties.
I like what he's doing trying to get people on Mars, though. I think we should be pushing space exploration more. Like, all that kind of stuff is so fascinating.
It's fascinating.
Like, I love to know the origins of where we came from, humanity, the universe, things like that. Do you have any strong thoughts on that?
Bro, I'm just here today, right now. I spawned into this reality, this three-dimensional realm. I don't know what the fuck is happening. Some people tell you that there's reptilians. Some people tell you that there's all sorts of shit. All I know is that there's something weird, right, taking place. I can't put my finger on it. I don't know what exactly it is. All I know is that humanity is very much controlled at a mass scale, and it's definitely controlled by maybe a couple thousand people that really understand how the world really works. And they do it through banking. They do it through social media platforms, and they are being quite effective at it.
What do you say to people who say that you're just talking shit and you're crazy?
I mean, that's fine. That's fine.
I get
it every now and then. I get people that say that I'm talking out of my ass, but who cares?
But I think it's like many things. Like, if people actually sit down and listen to you on long form content, like an hour and a half, like, you make a lot of sense. You're very articulate, very intelligent. But if somebody sees the short form chopped up clip of you saying something for 30 seconds out of context, people are like, where's this coming from?
I think that's the beauty of short form. Short form isn't about expressing your full opinion. Short form is basically just like an internet billboard. Mm-hmm. So the more billboards you have, the more views you get and the more eyeballs you get. And then long form content is where people actually get to understand and know what you're actually about. So yeah, I have some people grill me at a short clip level, but when you start digesting content at a macro level, I think a lot of the narratives or context that I'm trying to convey make quite a bit of sense.
I've seen quite a lot of people attempt to do this model of expansion on social media, like you have done very well, Tate has done very well, but they seem to have not executed it very successfully. I think that's either they don't have the right team behind them, or they're just not saying something of value, or I don't know. It's not grabbing the attention. It just doesn't work.
They don't know how to run a business. Mm-hmm. Content distribution is a business. You can't just run 40 clips. In 2023, we posted 153,000 clips once every 4.5 minutes. Mm-hmm. I'm going to reduce that to once every 60 seconds just to piss off some haters so that they can see me on their feet a little bit more.
You got all these guys on the payroll, or they
incentivize? I have 160 employees right now running my short form content, and I'm only going to scale that team at bigger levels. I just opened up an office in Asia as well. This is a short form office to just create content and be able to distribute that content at a mass scale, because advertising doesn't really work the same way that it used to. Anytime you see a sponsored post, you're like, okay, this person's trying to sell me something. But if you want to get your message across, you have to be able to have as many billboards as possible. And a piece of content is just a billboard. Whether it's positive, negative, you get laughed at, or people agree with what you're saying, it doesn't really make a difference. It's merely a funnel to long-form content where people get to know what you're deeply about.
You want it to be shareable.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, like, a lot of the stuff you've been putting out, people are sharing that.
All sorts of stuff. Yeah. I say some crazy shit as well, just on purpose to... because it's never bad to have a couple enemies. It's never bad to have a couple people that hate on you. It's all good.
Well, I think this is something which I've realized. Like, if you do want to be successful, if you do want to earn some serious money, then you have to be prepared to piss a couple of people off.
Presidents win elections off of 51% popularity. The other 49 hate their guts. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have everybody love you. If your goal is to be loved by everybody, then you're going to get lost in the sauce and you're going to not really understand how to be happy, because not everybody's going to agree with you. Not everybody's going to like you. And at the end of the day, it doesn't really make a difference. Mm-hmm. My goal is very simple, is I'm here to express certain opinions, and these opinions might change in 2 months. That's the beauty of it. You know, we're always evolving. We're always learning. And I'm just trying to scale my content distribution and utilize this glitch that we currently have of being pushed at a mass level on the internet, because I don't know it'll be around forever. Mm. I'm just maximizing the attention while we have it.
What are some of the biggest lessons that you've learned since our last meeting, which I believe was almost a year ago? What have you learned in the past year?
Community is one of the only things that can stand the test of time. You can build a YouTube channel. You can have a lot of followers. But just because you have followers doesn't mean you have a community or a group of people actually resonate with your message. If you look at Apple, they have a community. They don't just have buyers. They have a community. A community is based off of trust. It's based off of a shared vision. It's based off of people that enjoy the product or the service or the ecosystem that you're developing. I think that's a big one. The second one is, like I said before, the internet is the democratizer of opportunity. It doesn't matter where you start. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter your religion. It doesn't matter your belief system. It doesn't matter anything that you've done in the past. You can leverage the internet to make a lot of money, build a lot of volume when it comes to attention and when it comes to the eyeballs that you receive, and that you can utilize it to get extremely wealthy. Mm-hmm. So social media, funnel that into a community, and then have a product that is sellable. And the product can be a physical product, it can be a digital product, or it can be a service. It's curating whatever that product, service, whether physical or digital, is that is of value or of need to your community, and then just presenting that to them. And through trust, we were talking about these high trust societies, they'll become customers. So instead of pitching them and selling them, it's build a community, let them integrate into your belief system, let them buy into a philosophy or way of life. And then from there, you just build products that serve them well.
Yours is Capsule Club.
That's one of them. Yeah. Capital Club. We launched it in October. I closed it again.
This was
October.
We were talking about this.
I closed it in December. I think we onboarded over 20,000 members, paid members. It did about $9 million net profit. And I close it in December. I'm relaunching it next month. It's going to be fun. I have a 130,000 person wait list to join Capital Club. And Capital Club is broken down, like I said, is my community, into three perspectives, three aspects. One is your academy. Your academy is basically an ecosystem to educate entrepreneurs in business, finance, biohacking. And the second aspect is the marketplace. So an integrated ecosystem, since I have a big community where I can go to different companies and be like, hey, can I get a better rate for your product? Can I get a better rate, a discounted rate for my community so that I can offer that? So you have now an arsenal and a set of tools and products that I can offer to my community at a better rate, making their membership basically free. And then finally is the network. The network, whether it's physical events or digital events, where people can come and solidify the relationships that they built on the internet. And it's been working extremely well. We're one of the fastest and largest growing communities in the world.
Yeah, I see how many people are frustrated and annoyed that they aren't part of it. Like, they're trying, but how do you even go through the process of letting people in?
So when I launched Capital Club in October, I did invites only. So I would invite 2,500 people
random.
A day, randomized through my email list. I have 450,000 people that signed up to join Capital Club, but I would only allow 14.76% of those 2,500 people that were invited per day to join, which is 369 individuals. So 369 individuals paid $369 every single day. So every single day, the business was generating over $100,000 net profit in subscriptions. Annual subscriptions, and it basically was a first come, first serve. If you didn't have access to Capital Club when you were invited and you missed it, well, too bad. No retargeting, no second chance, no upsell funnel. One simple product, one simple offer. If you're about it, so be it. If you're not about it, it's all good.
You've interviewed some pretty big heavy hitters.
Absolutely.
Which one individual did enlighten you the most, or one that you took the most away from?
I think I did two interviews that I think were phenomenal. The first one was I interviewed the head of the central bank of Albania. I flew all the way to Albania because I wanted to sit down and really understand the perspective that central bankers have with regards to crypto and Bitcoin. And we had a very heated conversation for a couple hours. So I put that inside Capital Club. That was really dope. Then I was able to bring a gentleman by the name of Brian Tracy, who's an OG. OG when it comes to sales, when it comes to productivity, when it comes to team building. So I flew all the way to California, sat down with him. We had a 3-hour session, charged me 10 grand per hour. So I was able to basically get all the community questions, put them together, and sit down with him. Things that would be very hard for an individual in the community at a very individual level to afford. So I was able to do that through the community. And then another buddy of mine, which you know, who's Raul, 29 years old. I think he just turned 30, absolute killer in business. And
for those who don't know who he was on my podcast a couple of weeks ago.
So he's a legend.
Check him out.
Absolute legend.
They call him the king of marketing in Germany, or the face of marketing or something.
He's a master marketer. Yeah. And that was a great session where we basically talked about marketing in the terms of warfare and how that is synonymous very much in today's operating in business is very much like warfare and very much like war. And whether it's psychological tactics, psychological warfare, psyops, all these things are synonyms for marketing, right? Mm-hmm. Marketing is just a different word to express these same ideas. So we talked a little bit about that. Those are three really valuable ones that I had. I was also now getting into interviewing and chopping it up with top guys in crypto. We've had some really phenomenal guests there as well. It's a good time.
Who's the one person that you would absolutely love to sit down with for two, three hours?
Pavel. Pavel, I think, is one of those guys that's actually fighting for freedom. Mm-hmm. And I think we share a lot of synergy against, you know, the big man, against the potential dystopia that's being created through the censoring of content. But I'll line it up. So it'll be good. I think I'm meeting with him tomorrow night at a party. So we'll have a good time.
Is that what you're doing at the moment? Then you're spending a lot of time traveling around. I don't feel like you have a base anymore.
You're constantly on the move. That's something that I've really been able to build out over the last 2 years. Like I told you last time, I sold my house. Yeah. I got rid of probably all my assets. I was liquid, right? So I was pretty much at that point, I think it was June, I was just in dollars and in the stock market. And then
it's a pretty amazing feeling knowing that you're not really tied down to anything.
Or tied into anything.
Yeah.
I understand having an incredible house. I understand having supercars. I understand having super yachts and how these things are glamorous and they're dope and they're accolades of success. But they also occupy a lot of mental real estate. Mm. And these are things that somebody else has marketed to you as beacons of success, right? Unless you've been told that a Lamborghini equals success, then not everybody's going to buy into that philosophy, but it's been marketed as something that equals success. But once you acquire it, are you truly successful, or did you just buy something because you had the ability to buy it? I just don't want to be tied down to materialistic things because it's just not my cup of tea. I want to be able to have the freedom and the peace of mind to do whatever it is that I want. So the more freedom that I have, the better ability I have to move, the better ability I have to think, and I have less things that people can hold against me and take away from me because I don't really have much. And then my entire rotation back into crypto was when BlackRock announced their Bitcoin ETF, that they were applying for their Bitcoin ETF. And BlackRock ETF is your basket of assets where basically individuals can come and invest into products. Exchange traded fund, that's what it's called. And they applied for it and they got it. And that's when crypto started to take off again. So I rotated all my cash because I held no assets. I didn't have these liabilities. I was able to rotate back into the markets, and it's doing extremely well.
What are your predictions for Bitcoin?
$150,000 2024.
Really?
100%. I mean, it's not that far away. We've achieved mass adoption. We are at the cusp of a massive revolution whereby crypto is no longer seen as gambling money. It's really seen as a store of value. It's seen as a medium of exchange. It's seen as a bet against the US dollar and a bet against fiat. Mm-hmm. Over the last 4 years, the US dollar has lost 20% of its purchasing power. Purchasing power means your ability to buy a good, a service at a certain given price. So let's say you had $10,000. 4 years ago, you would have been able to buy something. Today, you would need $12,000 in order to buy that exact same thing. But you don't have that extra $2,000. So you have to work extra in order to generate that money, in order to generate your ability to purchase said thing. So what happens when they continue debasing your currency? You have to have assets that you want to flee to. That's the first thing. The second thing is, have you tried to send money overseas?
Yes.
It's the worst thing in the
it's
world.
It's a headache. The bank will put an excessive fee on the transaction. It's a then fee. The exchange rate is terrible.
They'll ask you what you're doing with it. Sometimes it'll take 3-4 days to land. If it's a really big wire, sometimes it'll get flagged. You have to call the bank. You have to insert a PIN number. Mm-hmm. You have to get a text message. That text message, you got to verify. With crypto, I can just send you money, peer-to-peer transaction, without really having to worry about it. Really cool thing now that I was telling you before, Telegram is rolling out your ability to send money through usernames, right? So you're going to have your Telegram username. I'm just going to be like, hey, Mike, here's $10,000 in USDT. Done, sent to you. I don't have to ask JP Morgan Chase whether I can send money to your HSBC bank account and fill out a wire questionnaire, and then that gets logged. So now we have an interconnection.
Surely the government's going to get involved with that, because that, like,
at some point, absolutely. Unless it becomes so big that it's hard to stop, and that's where mass adoption needs to take place. That's where the peasants need to band together, just like the movie Bug's Life. Remember when all the ants got together?
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's what you have to do. When all the small fish come together, they can actually dictate what the status and the norm is going to be. But it requires a lot of balls, and it requires a lot of courage to do so, because you might have to sacrifice your freedom. Mm-hmm. You might have to sacrifice your lifestyle. You might have to sacrifice your well-being for the pursuit of that freedom. And most people are just not willing to give that up. Most people like to live as comfortable slaves. Mm. And it's a very sad reality. But that's why building on the internet and finding what I like to call these glitches, right? These people that resonate with a message of authenticity, a message of a life where you don't have to censor yourself every time you open up your mouth, a life of deep freedom where you can believe whatever it is that you want to believe. You can do whatever it is that you want to do, as long as it doesn't hurt or affect another person, is what I'm rooting for. And if we can band enough people together behind that, then I think it's an unstoppable force.
The moment I was earning enough money where people would make a pretty decent offer for me to do something, and I was just able to be like, no. Like, I genuinely don't want to do that. Like, I can't be bought. Like, that's an amazing position to be in.
Yes. And most people are for sale.
Yeah.
And most, like we talked about, these humiliation rituals, these are people that are for sale. Mm. And some people are like, I'm never for sale. Yeah, but what if they offer you $50 million? Mm-hmm. What if they offer you something that is life-changing? And some people get these offers that are life-changing offers. But if if you have a price, whether it's a multi-million dollar price or, you know, to keep your job because you get jabbed, then you're a slave, mm-hmm. because you're for sale. And I'm not for sale. That's why you need to be able to get rid of all the things that are liabilities or that can be used against you, so that you can live a life of freedom. And freedom doesn't mean having a lot of things. Freedom just means your ability to do whatever it is that you want to do, wherever it is that you want to do it, however it is that you want to do it. And it requires a lot of work to earn that freedom.
Yep.
And most people just don't want to put in the work to get rid of those shackles. I did, and it paid off. And now my objective is to be able to translate that same message to other people. Mm-hmm.
Very quickly, guys, I just want to ask you a quick question. Are you taking supplements? And if you are, do you have any idea if you're taking the right supplements in the right amounts? You see, the more that I discovered about the importance of micronutrient supplementation and the adverse health effects of micronutrient deficiencies, I would constantly ask myself the same thing. I would go into supplement stores, load up on bottles of micronutrients and pop pills daily without really knowing if they were doing me any good or not. That's when I decided to try out Bionic. Since 2021, I've been getting my blood work done with them every 3 to 4 months. And once the blood test has been analyzed, they would put together a customized micronutrient formula tailored specifically for me. And this would last me for 3 to 4 months until I got my blood work done again. And since then, I've honestly never looked back. If you are also serious about performing at your best, preventing development of diseases and maximizing your overall health and well-being, I highly recommend you give it a try. And they've recently introduced Bionic Go, which is a fraction of the price, where all you need to do is just fill in a questionnaire online without the need of a blood test. If you want to find out more or give them a try, head over to bionic.com, and you can use my exclusive referral code BQMikeThurston for a discount on your first order. Let's get back to the episode. Where are you getting the insider information for where the markets are heading, whether that be the stock market or when it comes to crypto?
When it comes to crypto, all you have to do is realize the amount of sovereign nations that are observing it. The fact that, for example, El Salvador made Bitcoin legal tender, mm-hmm. which means they made it money. So Bitcoin is legal as money. It's, mm-hmm. That's just crazy to think about, that a sovereign nation would consider this digital coin a medium of exchange and a store of value. So much so that the IMF has a policy that IMF is the International Monetary Fund. It's one of these organizations that funds a lot of countries that are in despair. They have a policy that if a sovereign nation legalizes a currency, then they have to consider that specific token or money source or thing money as well. So Bitcoin has gone from being, like I said, a gambling token or a black market casino chip to a store of value. That's the first part. The second part is just what you're betting on. When you hold US dollars, you're betting on the fact that the US dollar is going to hold its value, right? That's what you're betting on because you're holding it. But I don't want to bet on the US dollar because the US dollar has been fucking people for the last 50 years. So why would I bet on it? The US dollar is the reason why we fund wars. Right? Is the US dollar is the reason why you can print money out of thin air and fund mercenaries to go all over the world and drop bombs on kids.
Yes. Yeah, it's so wild how they send so much money to Ukraine. I don't know what the hell's going on in Israel, but the US has so many problems inside of the country itself. Like the homelessness problem is still something which absolutely baffles me.
It's crazy.
How have you not sorted this out yet?
Because they don't care. Because the government's there to steal from people, not to help people. And that's what people don't seem to understand. That government aid is not government aid. That when the United States comes and drops a $1 billion relief package, it's not a relief package, it's a loan. Mm. And if you don't pay off the loan, now you have to sell off national assets like land, like precious metals, like natural resources to pay back that debt. And that's how you turn countries into slaves.
Yeah. I like this quote, which you said, those who want to lead the orchestra must be willing to turn their back on the crowd. Mm. What do you mean by that?
You have to be okay with being misunderstood. Mm-hmm. You have to be okay with being rejected. You have to be okay with not thinking like the 99%. If you want to lead, you have to lead from a place of confidence. And the worst thing you want to be is be a follower that follows followers. Yeah. It's the worst thing that you can be. A sheep that follows sheep. A leader is the one that sets the direction, is the one that thinks on their own terms. Whether they're right or wrong, whether you agree with it or not, you have to be able to turn your back to the crowd. You must be able to turn your back to the status quo and the norm, because usually the norm is dictated, like we said, by perceptions that are managed by extremely powerful entities and people. And it's usually based off of a very limited set of rules and beliefs and a preconceived set of plans mm-hmm. in order to manage society. And most people cave to that. So whether it's the school system, whether it's how people think about a job, whether it's how people think about relationships, whether it's how people think about their eating habits, all these things, you have to be able to think out of a place of autonomy. And it may not be comfortable. It may not be popular, but usually the popular thing is not always the best thing.
Mm.
And if you want to be a leader, you have to lead yourself first. And you have to lead yourself through free thought and through critical thinking. And unless you develop those things, then you're going to just be a follower of followers.
Speaking of free thought and the way that you are conjuring your thoughts together, what do you mean by devil music? I was intrigued to know by what does Luke mean by this, and what types of music fall under the category of devil music?
It's interesting.
I listen to music, I'm like, hang on, is this what Luke was talking about? Like, should I not be listening to this right now?
So music is, there's different levels to the music, whether it's the vibrational frequency that's attached. You can go to churches today that actually are playing vibrational frequency sounds. This is proven and recorded, where you can manipulate people's emotions through certain vibrational frequencies. At churches, some mega churches, they'll kind of run sound waves in order to evoke emotions for people to give more money, in order for people to believe certain things, which is crazy to think about. And then you have to also look at who's the origin source of that song. What's their intent? What are the lyrics? What are the lyrics telling me? Is it nurturing my soul? Is it destroying me? Is it making me view women in a different lens? Is it making me think about things that I shouldn't be thinking about? Or is it inspiring me? Is it pushing me towards positivity? Usually, once again, if it's mainstream, it's based on controlled narratives. You can even look at the prison industrial complex. Most of the prisons in the United States, not most of them, but a decent percentage of them, are privately owned, which is crazy to think about. So that means that prisons are businesses. A lot of the prisons that are controlled at a private level, they have a stake in the biggest music record labels. And they've done deals with a lot of hip-hop artists to push certain narratives on violence and gang culture.
Fuck the police.
To just fill up the prisons.
Mm.
And if you don't think that that is truth, all you have to do is go watch some of the Ice Cube interviews where he's literally talking about how there is a, and talk about somebody who's in the game, right? Who's been offered these deals to push certain narratives, to push certain songs and certain culture to get these prisons filled, right? Because the more prisoners you have, the more profitable you are. And I would just be very careful, whether it's a podcast, whether it's a YouTube video, whether it's a movie, whether it's a song, be very careful and try to avoid anything that you think isn't going to nurture your soul. One, two, be very careful that you understand the intent of the person. And three, be very careful with the lyrics, because repetition also influences behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're always listening to fuck bitches, sex, 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 drugs, guns, well, that's pretty much what you're going to be thinking about all day long.
Or girls listening to girls talking about being a hoe.
Exactly.
You're probably going to be a hoe.
So these are all perspectives that, once again, the mind is very malleable. The mind is very persuadable.
But the worrying thing is how these people are literally idolized, particularly in America. Like, I feel as though the worst people are getting all the fame and the attention.
Well, because fame is fabricated. Once again, if you control the radio stations and people just turn on the radio and you're the one that dictates what songs are going to be on the radio, then you're good. If you understand vibrational frequencies and what triggers certain emotions, like Drake's mastered vibrational frequencies. That's why he has a specific beat, a specific tune, a specific flow. It's because he found a winning flow that just causes him to have hit after hit after hit. There's a science behind it. It's not just, oh, this guy just sits in a lab and the song just cooks up and it's dope. No, there's a science behind virality. There's a science behind distribution. There's a science behind fame. I don't think any person is, or very few people are famous just by naturally becoming famous. A lot of people fabricate fame into existence, and you cause it through distribution, and you cause it through messaging. Everything's calculated. It's more calculated than people actually think. When you look at video games, when you look at the music industry, when you look at the movie industry, they literally hire psychologists to come in and figure out how to push certain narratives because they understand how the brain works.
Yeah.
And unless you're safeguarding your mind and you're the one that's dictating how you want to think, then somebody's going to think on your behalf.
You know, the weirdest thing is when I meet some super smart people, they're so good at mastering the art of conversation and charisma. I feel like I'm literally being seduced mid-conversation. And it's like scary sometimes. You have to kind of be aware that some people are, they're smart and they know how to play you.
And there's really good people that understand this, like very good players that really understand psychology. One of them, a really famous one, was Edward Bernays. Mm. Edward Bernays, known as the father of propaganda, he was related to Sigmund Freud, who's known as the modern father of psychology, and also related to Randolph, who's one of the co-founders of Netflix. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting how the propaganda machines work. So when you look at Edward Bernays, he was the one that pushed the breakfast narrative, right? Because the meat industry wasn't producing a lot of sales. So he started pushing breakfast as a main narrative, and sausage and bacon, and these things, just so the meat industry was able to perform better. He also pushed different narratives like cigarettes being the torches of freedom for women. So it was no longer, hey, just have a cigarette because you want to have a buzz or whatever. It was a signal, it was a movement. And these are people that understand human behavior. They understand human emotion. They understand psychology. They understand how the brain works, and they utilize it against you. Mm. It's very scary, but it's very real.
What's going on with the vlogs? It's been 6 months since your last one.
Yeah.
I'm sure you have a lot of people demanding when the next one is coming.
Yeah. I mean, I've been focusing a lot on the short form stuff and it's been going well. And I've been in crypto. I've been focused on building a lot in the space. I've been investing a lot in the markets. I've been working with a lot of teams, and my attention has been diverted a little bit in that direction, but I'll be back. I want to get back in the game. I've been a little bit lazy, not from a sense of the inability to make it, but more so there's so many other things happening in life and you only have a certain amount of hours a day. I'm still refining the content team and building that out, but it's underway. Probably get one rolling out.
They do require more work than people think.
Yeah.
Even just being to Japan, like pretty much filmed the whole thing. The amount of content we got was crazy. Just trying to keep in the best aspects of the trip, making sure it's like edited nicely. Like I'd much rather take my time with it than to try and rush it and then put something out which is going to be rushed. Like when it's ready, it's ready.
It's a business, dude. Making videos on the internet is a full-time business. I'm already running a real business. I already have my venture capital fund. I have my crypto fund. I have different projects that are rolling out. So sometimes your mind gets occupied with different projects and content gets sidelined. But right now, I think we're doing about 10 million views a day on short form, 10 to 15 million views a day. So that's good enough for now.
Yeah. Well, I feel like every podcast which you do seems to be racking up quite a lot of views. There's certainly a lot of people that want to listen to you. Do you feel as though there's things that you've wanted to talk about that you never really get to talk about during a podcast that people don't ask you about? Because I feel like, you know, when we did ours, we titled it Glitch in the Matrix. After that, I noticed a lot of other podcasts had similar titles like Glitch or Matrix. And I know that's kind of like your thing. But is this stuff that you like want to talk about, but they don't ask you?
Yeah, people ask me a lot about religion, relationships privately. They ask me more on the technical side of business. When it comes to long form content, I always try to put myself in more now than before in the shoes of the listener, and realizing that maybe the conversations that you and I can have about how to build a seven-figure business are just like common conversations to us. And we can literally sit down and talk about how somebody can make $250,000 in a month. And you'd be like, oh yeah, like that's doable. Mm-hmm. But that may not necessarily be approachable for everybody, and it may seem far-fetched and unrealistic. So it's pretty much trying to figure out how to dial that down in a way that it's digestible for more individuals. Mm-hmm. So I found myself, you know, making content where I talk about, you know, making $10,000 in a day.
Yeah.
And my business makes a lot of money, but my business also spends a lot of money, right? So I have over 100 employees on payroll just inside Capital Club, outside of the distribution team and outside of my content creation team. These are all families that I need to fund. My payroll is $450,000 a month, right? So when you look at $10,000 a day, that's $300,000 a month, $3.6 million a year. If I was just making 10 grand a day, I wouldn't be able to cover my basis for my current expenditure for my business. So I have to be thinking bigger, and I have to be thinking what may be unrealistic to most and what may be far-fetched, simply because I have big goals, big ambitions, and big dreams for the organization that I'm trying to build.
Does that monthly overhead stress you out ever? I know your brother has mentioned the stress, the silent killer.
Stress is a silent killer, indeed. I'm not stressed because we make a lot of money, and I just manage the budget really, really well. But it's more so the fact that you have to show up for your team every single day and you have to lead. That's what I would say is the more stressful part, is that every day it doesn't matter what you did yesterday. You have to continue showing up. You have to continue performing. But the money that the business generates is for the business and the business growth. Thankfully, I've been able to make money in the markets, enough money where I really don't have to work or deal with all the bullshit that happens on the internet. I really don't necessarily need it. But I really want to build this ecosystem inside of Capital Club, because when AI becomes a massive dominant force, human connection is going to be extremely important. Community is going to be extremely important. In real life, relationships are going to be extremely important. These are things that AI cannot replace. AI cannot replace human connection. AI cannot replace sitting down with another person and having a conversation. Mm. It's not going to be able to replace that, at least in the short term. So
they're going to be robot girlfriends. I guarantee you there's going to be a lot.
Not in the next decade or so. So next two decades, there's a lot of degeneracy with that shit where these guys have AI girlfriends, and that's some cuck shit. But in the meantime, I see a lot of people on the internet, and as much as we feel like we're socially connected, a lot of people are just isolated.
Yeah.
So being able to humanize that perspective is what I'm trying to accomplish. And at the end of the day, money's dope, but what happens when AI starts replacing a lot of jobs and we no longer see fiat as the main source of value? What if energy becomes the main source of value? What if computing power becomes the main source of value? What if influence becomes a main source of value? So these are the different things that I'm working on, because I've already been able to achieve money. So what is the next frontier? The next frontier is community building. The next frontier is being able to find the people that resonate with my message and building things with them. I often describe my community as when you look at societies, especially in the early ages when farming was introduced, they were all built close to, if not near, like on top of fresh water sources. So let's take Egypt, for example. Egypt was built around the Nile River, especially the first kingdoms. If you polluted the Nile River, then that civilization wouldn't exist. That civilization wouldn't flourish. I consider my community the Nile River, right? So you don't want to pollute the Nile River. You want to be able to provide as much value as possible. You want to keep that as clean as possible. And then a society flourishes from that. So, you know, I have people in my community that start businesses together. They'll get together in person through different pop-ups or different initiatives. We just had a big one in Austria, where it was like 40 people in Austria got together because we've been able to form a community, and then they humanize it, and they build relationships, build businesses, build ventures, things of this nature. So they're building a society on top of this Nile River, which is the community. Mm-hmm. So the goal is, what can I do to never pollute the Nile River, right? And build the community. And then everything that flourishes from it is just a byproduct of keeping that integrity of that location. And I've had fuck ups, you know, I'm not perfect whatsoever, but I'm definitely trying to be that community leader that is necessary on the internet, for better, for worse. I think we're doing a great job.
How the hell have I not met your brother yet? Where is he? How is he doing?
He's training in the mountains right now. Really? He just like, he said, hey, he was like living in Malaysia for a couple months. You guys should train together. You guys would have a fucking blast.
He's in very good shape.
You guys would have a really good time. His philosophy of training is very different than the average person. He's very inspiring for sure.
He looks like a very functional human being.
Yes. and he just thinks about health from a different perspective. He thinks about it more from a place of mental well-being.
Yeah.
Because he went through a season of depression.
Oh, there's a lot of people that look healthy, but they're so messed up in the head.
And he went through a very deep season of depression. I won't go into details of it. That's for him to disclose, but very suicidal. And I remember when we were living in the U.S., I had to pool guns that he, because in the U.S., you can have your gun license and have a couple weapons and stuff like that. I had to take his guns away, right? Because he started cutting himself, doing like crazy shit. And then he started getting into the gym, really focusing on his health and wellness, focusing on biohacking, focusing on proper nutrition, focusing on managing and regulating his serotonin levels. And it really changed the way that he lives. So I see him get so many messages where it's like, you're not going to see a ton of people in this community that like are out here looking like Mike Thurston, mm-hmm. right? Ultimate shred. But they'll message, hey, my mental well-being is doing good. I wake up and I'm not lethargic. I feel flexible. I feel mobile. And I think that that's one of his motivations and one of his passions. He likes to call it anime shreds. Get shredded like an anime character. It's pretty dope.
But it's good. With all the content that I put out there, particularly with the podcast, I'm hoping that it helps people or inspires people, even with like the travel vlogs and just documenting my story. I never do it from a position where I'm trying to show off and be like, hey, look at me. Mm. I'm trying to show people that, look, this is where I once was, a personal trainer living in this terraced house in Newcastle, but I've worked my ass off to get to where I am today. And it's possible for you to do it.
Yes. I mean, you're doing a great job, bro. Like that's why you have millions of followers and you inspire so many people.
Yeah. And it's... I feel like I get a lot of purpose from doing something like this and relating it to mental health. Like I have gone through phases, particularly, I remember it was the summer of 2021. Like I was living what I thought would be the ultimate life. When I'd moved to Ibiza, I was there for a couple of months, wasn't really doing, you can't call it work. It was a couple of hours a day creating content for social media just to keep things ticking along. And it was just a pure hedonistic lifestyle, which was fun. For a couple of weeks, then it gets very repetitive. Then you somehow strangely get like, I wouldn't call it depressed, but you're quite
your vibrational
flat.
Frequency is lower.
It's like, what am I doing? Like I literally have no purpose. I'm not being useful in any way, shape or form. It's like a very selfish existence. Just trying to enjoy life, but it's actually not really bringing you that much enjoyment. And I think that was when, at the end of that summer, I was like, hang on, all these things which I thought would make me happy, they're not actually making me happy.
That's why retirement isn't a thing.
Yeah.
Because you can either be a consumer or a producer. And you look at the people that consume all day.
Yeah.
They're just consuming. You can see it on their face. You can see it in their habits. You can see it in their belief system. You can see it in their thinking patterns. The people that produce real value, they have to show up every day. And if you have a value to provide, then you can find purpose. And purpose and hope is the things that makes you want to wake up in the morning mm-hmm. and actually achieve something.
It literally was a mini retirement. And I had a taste of what it was like. I was like, I do not like this.
And I think that's a big fallacy that a lot of people aspiring to be entrepreneurs think of is, hey, you know, I'm going to work 5 years, make a ton of money, 10 years. And I'm just going to go live on a beach, sip some coconuts and have a good time, get a margarita. And I'm just going to hang around for the next 50 years mm-hmm. and just going to be a blob of unproductive bullshit. And it's not a very productive, happy lifestyle because we are created to work. We are meant to produce. We are meant to provide value. And if you can provide value, you bring purpose. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And what I love about this journey, creating content, and what I love about the internet is the internet is not only a democratizer of opportunity, but it also is a democratizer of opinion. So you get so many opinions and so much feedback from who you are, the content that you produce, and people keep you accountable, they keep you in check, They keep you on your toes, which also brings purpose because you start evaluating. It's kind of like a mirror. You start seeing areas in your life that need improvement. So you see somebody making more money. You're like, okay, well, that's probably possible. Or you see somebody with a better physique, or you get roasted on the internet, and you're like, oh, well, maybe they're right. Maybe I should work on this. And you utilize it as a source of inspiration to continue leveling up.
Yeah. Well, you finished that last vlog with a very inspiring rant, which was regarding the three essential skills that every man should have. First is being the best at what you do. Second of all, to be irreplaceable. And third of all,
to be in high demand.
Yeah. Being on the market trends.
Yes.
What are the trends that you're seeing for this or the rest of this year?
I mean, crypto's at the pinnacle of what's taking place. Content creation is at the pinnacle, and building businesses online. The internet is what I like to call the digital gold rush. In the year 1848, rumors spread in the eastern colonies that in California, there was a man that had found gold in the American River. And once the president announced that these rumors were true, 300,000 people moved from east to west, whether it was by land or by sea, to find gold. Today, we live in a similar opportunity. We live in a digital gold rush. The opportunity to change and fundamentally, radically revolutionize your existence within just a couple years by tapping into the internet. The internet has changed everything, because it doesn't matter if you're in Africa, South America, Asia, if you have access to the internet and access to a device, you can build a business. You can make money. You can change your life for free. You can tap into AI tools today. You can not even, English can not even be your native language, and you can be doing copywriting in English that is verified, vetted, cross-checked, cross-examined, punctuation, ready to go, and you can sell copywriting services. 100%. Why not? You could literally build an agency from utilizing free ad tools. You can be a content creator and get millions of views, like you, a fitness, most fitness influencers, most fitness people are broke, but you utilize the internet and the digital gold rush to change your reality. So that is being on market trends. Being on the internet is the biggest market trend. And understanding that there's digital currency to power the internet is extremely important. Back to your other two points, you need to be in high demand, but you also need to be the best at what you do, because the marketplace rewards value and it rewards quality. It's not just about being the first one to show up. It's about being the best. You need to be the best at what you do. You need to be in high demand, and you need to be irreplaceable. A lot of people are going to be replaced by AI. A lot of people are going to be replaced by another competitor. So you become irreplaceable by carving yourself in the marketplace as a person of authority or as an organization of authority, by being ahead of market trends or utilizing and leveraging the new technology that's coming out so that you don't get squashed. And that is a recipe for massive success.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned before a little bit about peptides. What's your thoughts on the whole biohacking scene, peptides, things like that, to optimize health and well-being?
The peptide scene, the whole bioregulator scene, obviously there's areas of massive hype. But you look at David Sinclair, who's the leading figure when it comes to studying the brain, and he pushes one peptide known as NAD+. And NAD+ was created in the 40s and 50s, pre-Cold War between Russia and the United States, as a protein that gives you neuroplasticity, helps with neuroplasticity, it helps with rewiring neural networks and helping with Alzheimer's and dementia. So I think it's a new area of science that is being developed and something that a lot of people should be looking into. Consult with your doctor for more information.
I think for sure there's, unfortunately, it seems to be one of those things that's only accessible for people who have money. Like I went to, there's a few biohacking places here.
If you don't have much money to spend, like a lot of those off limits, like if you want to go there, do 20 minutes of red light therapy, do a cold plunge, do the cryo, go in the oxygen chamber, like that's going to set you back a bit. So I think for those people who don't have the access to it or the funds to pay for it yet, I think just going back to the basics of
free, there's free things,
consuming nutrient dense, unprocessed foods, high quality, exercising, prioritizing sleep, not drinking tap water,
not drinking alcohol,
alcohol as well,
making sure you ground, making sure you get good sunlight, making sure, like you said, be in a situation where you have a life of balance. Most people live a life of imbalance, and they're not at peak performance. So you can do a lot of things for free that require $0 that are going to keep you healthy. Stretching, mobility.
Oh yeah! Last time I saw you, we went through some stretching.
We went through a session. We had a good time.
Yeah, I felt good after session. That actually inspired me to get on the stretching journey.
Yes,
because of that, and then there was a tightness on my left side. I think it was a snapping hip syndrome or something. It sounds nasty, but it's not as nasty as you think. It's quite common. Every time I walked, I had a little click on my left hip. So apparently there was some tightness in the IT band, a few other issues as well, just purely from lack of stretching. And obviously I am no spring chicken now, I'm 33. I mean, think about it now, I've been training like consistently every week for like 15 years.
Crazy.
No stretching.
Yeah.
Like, of course it's going to catch up to me.
Yeah.
So
mobility is extremely important. You already built the skeletal muscle, which is going to give you longevity. But look how many people, look at old people try to walk out of, just get out of a car. Yeah. Or just get up from a chair, or the inability to sit squat.
Yeah.
It's horrible. So I got to get my gains up, not going to lie. But next time we do part three next year, hopefully I'm a little bit closer to your level.
Are you going to be, I imagine, nonstop travel for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I mean, just traveling, living. Bro, one of my goals is to visit every country in the world. If I would say, I only splurge on a couple things. A food, I like experiences, and travel.
Yeah,
and I'll stay at the nicest villas. I'll stay in the nicest places. I'll rent a couple cars here and there, but it's all about the experience.
That stuff makes a difference.
Yeah,
whenever I've noticed this recently, whenever I try and save some money by staying in a place which is cheaper, I notice it affects the overall experience of the trip. Like when you. It sounds ridiculous, but when you actually do stay in a place which provides this, I don't know, amazing environment, it enhances the trip massively. And a lot of the time you spend quite a bit of time in the place that you're going to be staying at. I mean, I get it. If you're traveling around like all day from first thing in the morning till last thing at night, then you probably don't need, you know, the most amazing hotel room or villa or whatever it might be. But if you are going to be spending quite a bit of time somewhere, then spend a little bit of extra money. Like, particularly if, you know, all these people that they go on their honeymoon to the Maldives, if you're doing this once in a lifetime experience, don't try and look around for the cheapest villa. Like, try staying like one of the best places.
Go for the best experience possible. Because it's an experience for you.
Yeah.
You're depositing, you're taking dollars or whatever currency you have and you're exchanging it and you're depositing it into the bank account of experience. Mm-hmm. It's so worth it. Why do we have money if not to utilize it? It makes no sense. What am I? You're saving dollars while the government's out here printing it out of thin air? No. When you use that money, have experiences, because those experiences lead to new information. They teach you new things about the world. Like, for example, you spend $10,000 on this place. Bro, you spend six figures a year on this pad. Mm-hmm. It's a great experience.
Every time I wake up and I walk out my bedroom epic. And I look at that view, it puts me...
It's epic.
In a mood every day,
and you could live in a one bedroom shitty apartment that is looking at the roads and the sand and all the bullshit. But you decided to utilize your resources for experiences, and the more experiences you have, the more information you unlock as to what is possible in life. Mm-hmm. And experiences are just data sets and pockets of information as to the potential of life. You go to Bali and you stay at these massive villas overlooking the ocean. You go to Ibiza, you go to Europe, you go to South America, you go to Patagonia, go snowboarding in the Swiss Alps or anywhere. These are experiences that are beautiful. Life is about experiences. Life is about experiencing the fullness and the range of everything. So don't limit yourself to one experience. Don't limit yourself. Don't be cheap with yourself. You could maximize your life by betting on yourself and allowing yourself to live a little bit better.
Yeah. I want to, when I'm on my deathbed or whatever the time comes, I want to look back at my life and be like, that was a good life.
There's only two regrets that I have in life, and they may sound super superficial, but they're not superficial for me because they're once in a lifetime opportunities. One of them was the World Cup final.
In which country?
This one, the one that just happened in Qatar.
Yeah.
And I could have bought the tickets, $15,000, $10,000 each. I was going to take my dad to it. My dad wasn't available because he was busy at the time. So I was like, okay, whatever. I'm just going to watch it from the apartment that I had in Dubai and just watch it on the TV. Argentina ends up winning.
What a game.
The craziest match of all time. And I'm here, I'm Argentine, and I'm like, fuck. All I had to do was like,
just go.
I'm like, all I had to do was go. And that's an opportunity I will never be able to relive.
Yeah.
That's to me is a regret because I had the possibility. I had the resources to do it, but I was cheap about it.
Yeah.
So I want to just watch it on the TV. I watched it with some friends. It was dope, but it was like, you missed out on an experience. And you don't have to have a ton of money for experiences. Mm-hmm. You just have to be able to realize that life is about finding these experiences and enjoying them in the process.
Even when I was in Japan, the opportunity came up to watch one of the big sumo matches live. And it's really difficult to get inside of those arenas because the whole country wants to go, but they give out tickets like the lottery just to random people. So I managed to get in contact with someone who had a contact with somebody else. The tickets were not cheap, they're expensive. I was like, screw it. Like, when else am I going to be in Japan? It's going to get the opportunity to watch sumo. And I went, and it was just such a cool experience. Like, everything was so different. Like, the way that everybody was sat in the stadium, you know how at the front, it's like usually the more expensive seats. We walk in, everyone sat down, cross legs, just sat on cushions. I was like, what? This is like the VIP area, and everyone's just sat in these little areas, like, cross-legged. It's like, what the hell? It was so cool.
It's so dope.
It was like, it was worth
it. What's a country in your pipeline that you want to visit? We're going to Europe with Raul this summer for like 2 weeks. You should join. We should do a little boys trip.
Whereabouts?
We're going to do three countries, and I think we're doing Ibiza, we're doing Croatia, and then I think we're going to do another one. Have some mushrooms. Have a good time.
That's one thing I've not done. I mean, I've done a few things, but I've never done
you
mushrooms.
You should do mushrooms with
me, last time I saw him.
Raul.
He was telling me about it.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. Motherfucker's going to be like, yo, why'd you say that shit?
But
he had a great experience. And we should maybe do a little boys trip.
Next couple of years going to be very fun. Like, there's so many opportunities. And there's, in terms of the places I really want to go to,
I have Australia and New Zealand in my list.
Australia's a place I feel like I have quite a lot of my followers that are based in Australia, big fitness scene there. Still never been. Like, random places like South Korea. I want to see what that's like.
Have you done South America yet?
I've done Chile and Argentina when I was 16 on a rugby tour.
Nice.
Done Brazil, did the carnival in Brazil. But there's places like Costa Rica, Colombia, Venezuela. All those places seem pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think Central America is pretty dope if you have the ability to hit up. Now El Salvador is getting better with the whole crime thing is pretty dope. Costa Rica, Panama, they're nice. Colombia is super sick. Venezuela, you can't really get into. Communist as fuck right now.
Cape Town is what I've been. Cape Town.
I hear good things and bad things about South Africa. It's what they call a blue zone. So there's the vibes there are probably immaculate. Yeah. But I don't want to get slaughtered.
Yeah, I'm like you. I want to take them all off, see what it's like.
My big goal is probably a couple of ranches around the world, chilling, potentially. I'm writing two books right now, so I want to potentially get those done this year.
Writing two simultaneously.
One is on Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. I've been writing that one for about a year, and then the second one is my philosophy on life.
Yeah.
So that one's. That one takes time because it's really being able to learn what I believe.
You still holding it down with the other half?
Yes. Yes.
Admirable.
Loyal to one woman for the rest of my life.
Yeah. How does she handle all the travels?
we've been able to build a relationship that is based on deep understanding that you have to sacrifice certain things in order to have other things in life. So in our relationship, communication is the key to success. A lot of people, they fear communication. They fear expressing how and what it is that they want. And it's also understanding that you can't have everything in life. You can't be out here on the couch cuddling, watching Netflix all day and simultaneously run a multi-million dollar business and travel the world. But the best I can do, sometimes I bring her to some of the trips. Sometimes she just travels and hangs out with family. But it's great.
It can be difficult because if you bring them along for one of your trips,
can be a distraction.
A huge distraction.
Yeah. Hey, where are we going to eat? Yeah, I want to eat again.
I need the toilet.
and you know, like it travels dope, but simultaneously, I have aggressive travel schedules. Yeah. It's like I'm pinging back and forth. I was I did 2 months in Asia, January and February. Then I went back to Puerto Rico. I was there for 4 days. Mm-hmm. Then back to Malaysia because we had to get some stuff done at the office. Then I did Singapore. Now I'm here in Dubai. Next week, I'm back in Malaysia. Then I have to go see some team members in South Korea. Then I'm going to go back to Puerto Rico for the summer and just grinding. So
it's hectic, but it's definitely more enjoyable if you can fly first class.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. I'm covered there.
Awesome, man. It's always a pleasure sitting down with you. I always walk away from it just enlightened and just my brain is racing. I definitely want to make this an annual thing.
Yeah, me too, bro. It's going to be a good one. I'll start probably working on some podcasts and some public stuff as well. So would love to have you on mine. I think people can learn a lot about your discipline and your commitment to self-development. And I think that as you continue to mature in your business career, people are going to notice and take you and realize that you're a serious entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to seeing you absolutely crush the business scene, bro.
Thank you very much.
My hands are sweaty. Sweaty as fuck, right? Hey, Dubai weather. The AC's off. We're out here. It's a little bit hot. Hey, you got to check it real. Got to keep it real. Hashtag undeniable in the comments if you want to live the best fucking life of your dreams.
Awesome.